have a quorum. Yeah. Stephanie, do you want to go ahead and... Should we bring Judy up? You want to move over closer, Judy? So I know that Margaret will not be here. But it, well, Kyle and... Stephanie, do you mind calling the roll, please?
Tom Moore. Here. Judy O'Connor. Here. Joe Omoasagie. Elaine Palencia. Here. Kyle Patterson. Here. Julian Rappaport. Here. Ann Robin. Margaret White. Susan Fowler. Here.
So, great. It's spring break and we've got a quorum. We must all be retired. Okay, citizen input, public participation. We do have an opportunity at the beginning of the meeting for citizen input. We ask if there is citizen input to limit it to no more than 5 minutes, and we won't spend more than 20 minutes in total on input. We also will have a time for agency information before we go into old business. So citizen input is not related to agency or funded programs. Do we have any citizen input today? Okay. Is that First Followers? So that's an agency, right? So if First Followers, is it related to the agency or the program? If so, it will be a bit later in the agenda. If you can wait, that would be great. Thanks. Okay. Any other citizen input? All right. May I have approval of the agenda? Any? Great.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Great. I don't have any comments today. We are in the stage of being very busy and terms of reading applications and preparing for the review process, and I think we just need more time to continue to do that. We will have a brief discussion at the end of the meeting regarding whether or not we need a study session next week, so we'll hold that till the end. So new business, we have the 2017 annual report, pages 3 to 24. The board received this and will be asked to approve it. As you know, the staff prepare an annual report every year detailing services provided, the amount of money funded, and the four issues of community service events, service contacts, non-treatment plan clients, and treatment plan clients that we spent a lot of time last year talking about. So I will turn it over to Lynn and to Mark if they have some comments they want to make about the report, and then we can always have questions before we move to have a motion.
The format is the same as last year. We talked about maybe reconsidering the format or the contents. The only thing, there are certain things that are required, but the report includes some things that are not required, which have been of interest. But this format and content has been pretty much unchanged for over 20 years, with the exception of the, you know, Mark added the nice explanation of the service categories last year. So this is always on the table. We start working on the annual report before the year is even over. So before 2018 is over, we'll be preparing some of the service totals, because some of that is connected to the agency fiscal year. And then the last thing that we're able to put into it is the financial report, because it takes a while to settle that fiscal year. So we hoped that the fiscal year would be finished in the middle of February, but unfortunately there were a couple more things that snuck in there. So, you know, I guess this is a long way of saying anytime you wanted to see something different in the annual report, we could consider a different style or a different content or just a different presentation of the data.
Quick reminder, I think it was August or maybe September before we approved the annual report last year because of changes. So staff are willing to change, but hopefully we won't carry it out quite so long. Julian?
I just have a question.
Sure.
So on page 10, it says Developmental Services Center, and there's a total of $390,000, et cetera. And it says Individual and Family Support. And then over in the, on page 13, I guess I just don't understand what those numbers mean, because they're so small. They're so few. So I had the impression that it cost $390,000 to take care of four people, which couldn't be true. So
no, the four is events. Is events, and the nine is service contacts. But we're talking about 16 people, and these tend to be people who require a high level of support, usually one-on-one support, although not always. And so it's kind of... it's like intensive respite for some people, not for all. And then the non-treatment plan clients, of which there are 27, would be people who needed support for a short term, or they received some kind of equipment or an evaluation for equipment or a voucher for camp. Those are the kind of things. But the priority category for that program is those 16 people who receive intensive services, because they wouldn't have access to any state-funded services if it were not for this program. Anyway.
Okay. I mean, so maybe it's just because I never really look at the developmental board's details. It just seems so like an awful lot of money for a small number of people. So I just thought maybe what I'm concerned about is not that fact. What I'm concerned about is in a document that's sort of circulated around for people, it would be nice if it were easy for people to understand what it means.
Well, this is one of the sections of the annual report that is not required. And maybe there is a risk of putting this information in here outside of the context. I think Elaine would like to speak to the issue. But I do want to say DD services can be very expensive. So.
Oh, I just wanted to say that my son is one of those 16, and he's somebody you almost can't turn your back on. And he is not able to be employable in any meaningful way or have much in the way of self-care. So to put somebody like that into a model where you want them to be out in the community and you want them to have a full range of services is very intense, let me say, and the level of support that surrounds him, you know, and his medical issues is really, really high. I just wanted to put that in.
Sure. I mean, and that's all. I guess all I'm asking is whether or not it's advisable or necessary or maybe not. Maybe this is a question maybe for the DD board to discuss or not. I don't know. It just struck me as sort of pops out if you're familiar with it.
There's another large DD program in here. Well, it's not that large. There are a couple of other DD programs in here. But one is for very young children, and those tend to be less expensive per person because they might be an evaluation. So it's, you know, they're touching lots of children. And some of them are screenings and then rescreenings. So DD services, really, if you're looking at the cost per head, will be really do need explanation. They really do need a context.
And right now, there's an asterisk next to the DD-funded programs, which is then footnoted on page 11, that they're funded per our intergovernmental agreement with the DD board. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes I think others may not understand that we've set aside $650,000, which is what percentage of the budget?
Well, it's
12%.
It's roughly, it's 16 or 17, but the way it's rated is it's each year, whatever the percentage of increase the mental health board tax levy experienced, that amount is applied to the amount allocated for DD. So it goes back and forth between 16 and 17%.
So my point is, based on your comment, because I had circled those numbers too and thought, oh, and then realized why they were low, that perhaps there could be an I think it is helpful to have the funding that was provided to the agencies. This page, I think, is really helpful. And I think, which is page 10, 11, and I think page 13 and 14 is also really helpful. But without a context, one could have a big question about the numbers served. So maybe we also need to, whether it's this year or next year, under the service totals, brief narrative of what the service categories represent, could add a section stating that the Mental Health Board provides certain funds to the Developmental Disabilities Board, which may be providing more intensive services to some clients than would be typical in the mental health.
Well, there is.
Although we probably have some intensive.
You also have a range of intensity of support in the strictly mental health and substance use disorder sure. services. So what I would just want to put on the table is this is one of those reports that's not required. It's free of context. This information is available in other places through our website. And every year, this is the chart that gets questions. Whether it has mistakes or not, this is the chart that's attracting some, maybe it's hesitation mostly. So maybe we shouldn't have it.
By whom?
Yeah. Board members. Every year there are questions about this chart.
Well, if it's just us, I don't know, it's a big deal. But
I think that's, does it get, I mean, it's public information, so it's distributed
sure.
because it comes to the board. It's, do we get questions from the community?
No. But this same information is available within context in the stuff that's been publicly posted on our website. So this document is just kind of...
So this is my larger question okay. is, what is the purpose of this report here, this annual report that we're asked to approve every year? It has to have a purpose, and if it doesn't, then it's a waste of time.
And it does not allow you to compare with last year's results.
And it would... That wouldn't even be a meaningful comparison anyway because the programs are slightly different every year. So I also don't know. I mean, it's kind of it's laborious and it doesn't really tell you much of a story, in my opinion. So I don't know. It's been here longer than I have, so I don't know what. Do you remember the origin of it?
Going back to your original observation, there's only certain things that are specifically required by statute, and it's the financial information. I think the additional information that we've included is just kind of to provide some sense of how those funds are spent, and so to provide some context, but maybe that context isn't very illuminating, I think is part of what we're hearing.
Well, I don't have a strong opinion other than I feel like things shouldn't be done just if they have no purpose,
right.
especially since you're doing a lot of work on it. The other thought I have is if what you're saying is, well, if you look on the website, everything will be explained and it'll all be there. Well, maybe we should say that.
So next, we could add to this report right now a heading like that, or a footnote like that says for context and for information, please look at the website. And we can be really specific about where on the website to see it. These reports are also not required by statute, but we don't have these anywhere else. So I sort of like,
I find those,
I like these, yeah,
myself. Yeah. That actually is what I was going to say. That's okay. Not required, but that's what I find interesting.
You know, I think maybe this, it serves as kind of a, it's a preface to those. But so if we could put some kind of statement on one of these pages for this year, and then does that settle it for this year, do you think?
Well, we have the opportunity to make a motion in a moment. What you're saying, just to clarify, is that we're not required to have page 12, 13, and 14. So we could take that out in the future.
Or this year.
And that would reduce some of the questions that inadvertently may come up if people don't understand the range of programs that we serve. So...
Well,
given
I
that
personally would be in favor of clarifying what it means.
and I wasn't done yet. So I would say that for this year, I would recommend adding a footnote to go to the website for additional information and not having it come back and forth multiple times like we did last year.
Okay.
However, I believe that Kyle was ready to make a comment.
No, I was just going to move to modify the report to state the footnote directing people to go to the website for the comprehensive information.
Is there, so you're making a motion with an amendment. Is there a second?
Sure.
Okay, seconded by Dr. Moore and Elaine Quinn. Yeah. Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Thank you. Moving on then to, and thank you for the report. Oh, clearly it does take that time.
Are we getting ready to move on to B under new business?
We are, unless you have some
I have a question
questions
for
sure.
The director.
Go ahead.
And then on page 15, under those graphs that you just said.
Oh, yes.
Okay. The one under race, where it says, apparently African Americans make up 30% of those people being served. That seems to be, from my memory, that seems to be up, an increase on what we have done in the past. The question I have about that is, that 30%, do you know if they're all concentrated in a couple programs, or is that 30% across the board of the programs that we make awards to? And there's a second, I think that's important, and the second part of that is, if they're concentrated, I think it may also work not in our favor if there are programs that are specific to African Americans that white residents don't have access to or don't benefit from. So as we are getting better, we are creating another issue for ourselves, I think. I could be wrong. I don't mind being wrong either.
You will have, in the April board packet, you'll have that detail on all of the programs which you're currently funding and have applied for funding. So you won't have that detail for any program which is no longer funded or isn't requesting, but it's part of those program summaries. And you can see there really is quite a range. Like for some programs, there's demographics are roughly equal to general population, and for other programs, they're predominantly serving African Americans. So you'll see the wide range. And I think that the question you're raising then is, it really matters what the programs are, right? And so that I think it's more useful than for you to see that data, which you'll see in April. Yeah.
Moving on to B, at the application review process, questions from agencies.
Did you approve the
We did. Oh, we approved the annual report.
Oh, yes, the annual report, I'm sorry.
So did we need to, we don't need to approve the the three-year plan again, do we?
No, I'm sorry, the annual report.
Yeah, you need to ask for the vote on the annual report.
We did, and it was...
That was the amendment.
That was the amendment. Okay, thank you. Going back to the annual report, may I have a motion to approve the Mental Health Board 2017 annual report with the amendment? Kyle?
I move to approve the Champaign County Mental Health Board fiscal year 2017 annual report as modified.
Is there a second? All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed? Thank you. Then moving on to the briefing memo on our review process, which we have seen before, but this also includes, and this is not an approval motion, this is simply information, expectations of the process. Do you want to briefly address that? We all know what the schedule is. I think we've covered that many times. So it's page 26 and 27. We will be providing questions to the agencies based on our review of the proposals, just as we did last year. And Lynn, you wrote this in order to respond to agency requests for information about the process?
We actually, these are proposed responses. I mean, it's not in the form of a decision memo, but we're very interested in your thoughts. These are suggestions. The questions have come up from the agencies, and this is how we have answered or would like to answer. The one that we haven't answered is number four. That's, you know, I think we're very interested in whether we can split the two meetings up, split the discussion up this specifically. We think that would be most convenient for the agencies, and maybe that's helpful for you all too. Otherwise, these are questions that we've talked about with agencies, and we hope this is what you would agree with. So
if I could just comment, these questions arose last year, and we sent questions to the agencies as a result of our initial discussion, and then we asked that they send back a written response. And then we noted that in some cases the written responses were very lengthy and provided information that had not been included that should have been included in the original application. So we're saying that, yes, we will send out questions again, and we will ask that the questions be answered in as few words as possible. And, in fact, number three says no more than 50 words, which may be a little
too tight.
I would say that's probably too limiting for some of the questions that we've asked. But responses should be limited to the specific questions and be concise.
Okay. The turnaround time, I think, was why we made it such a small word limit, because we have to read then and process. And
right. But it may be that they need 100 words. I mean, some of the questions are a little bit more complicated, so I would just keep it concise. What we know we don't want, and the agencies, I think, are aware of this, is an addendum to the application that runs 50 pages, and something like that happened. Just a sec, Julian. The other thing is we did not provide an opportunity for agencies to answer questions when we were going through the review process as a board, because we were concerned about the amount of time available. This is a bit different in that we're agreeing in advance, if the board agrees, to split the discussion of the proposals into two sessions, April 18th and April 25th. and in advance let the agency know which session to come to. This would allow for simple questions to be asked and responded within the meeting, which is better than asking for, could you send me a yes or a no, when it could be very quickly addressed or dealt with. That's the essence of the expectations of the process. So I think the big question is, are we comfortable splitting the review of the applications into two parts? The agencies and the reviewers would know on what day their assigned applications would be discussed. And then secondly, if we split it into those 2 days, that should give us a limited amount of time for back and forth questions, as well as, if it's more complicated, requesting a written response, which the agencies really only have about 2 weeks, 3 weeks to turn around.
Not really, because if...
Because we've committed to providing you with staff recommendations for funding on May 9th, and I really am not comfortable doing that without complete information from the agencies. So that's why it would be good if the questions were answered at the meetings.
Right.
But it may not be possible.
But most of them should be. Most of the questions. Well, we looked at the array of questions that were asked last year.
Yes, that's true.
And in that review of the array of questions that were asked last year, what percentage could have been answered pretty quickly?
Your questions were really straightforward for the most part, as I recall, so yes.
Okay.
Sorry.
Julian. Okay.
So here I go. Again.
Okay, go.
I'm a little nervous about this because what I don't want to have happen, I don't want to get into kind of up and back debating dialogue with agency representatives. There was an application. Mm-hmm. We have pretty strict rules about applications being in and on a certain time, and if they're late, they're late, and they're not going to be considered, and so on. They ought to be complete. They ought to be carefully done. If we have questions, actually, that's good. We're giving people a chance to respond in directly to the
Well, the caveat would have to be that it's a very limited response time, so that if the question is more than a yes or a no or a short, very short answer, it's going to have to be a written response, because this isn't an opportunity to debate the merits of the proposal and whether or not it should be funded with the applicants. And I, too, would be very uncomfortable if it turned into that. And we did have applications last year that we had many questions about.
Okay, well, I mean, you have it's a difficult job to, once you raise a question and allow an applicant to come to the microphone, they start talking, and it's difficult to, it's not necessarily criticism.
if we, so there, it's possible, believe it or not, because this happens every meeting, that it's possible that we've made a mistake in the presentation of some part of an application. So we always want to make sure that the agencies can respond in writing to errors that we've made. But that's not really to be taken to mean to respond to omissions that they made or errors that they made. And so I think that you're talking about creating a, you know, that maybe there's a bottomless pit when we start doing that. Even though it's important, it's not the same thing as we've made a mistake and we're telling you the wrong thing about an application. The agencies really do need to step in and stop us, if that's true.
Yeah, I think I agree with Julian because it's a it could be taken advantage of. And then suddenly the applicants have an uneven, somebody has an uneven advantage. They're no longer all on the same playing field if someone takes the mic and, you know, is better at speaking, better at arguing, and brings in something new. And then you can't unhear it. You know, oh, that wasn't in our application, but this is really what we're, you know. So I tend to come down on Julian's side. I think we would open ourselves to an abuse of the process that might be quite inadvertent. It would just get rolling, and then what? Yeah.
My only thought about this is I think that these are just written responses to questions that we have. They're not... they can't come to the microphone to clarify the program. That's not the issue. And so my thought is that it become incumbent upon the board chair that when that response gets way out of line, and she has to step in and say that's not the purpose. So, because you'll never know what people are going to say when they get up there. But it's, so if she doesn't do that, then we are subject to hearing all kinds of, you know, right? So I think that's the one way, unless we just decide not to include it at all. But if we include it, then it's up to that chairperson to end that sequence.
Well, here's a question from the chairperson to the board members. How likely are you to have your questions prepared several days in advance, 2 or 3 days in advance of the board meeting? Because if you're able to send your questions, then we certainly could identify those that could be a quick yes, no, versus those that need to be a written response. And we would have those questions ready to go to the agency with maybe some additions based upon the interaction among the board. Again, I know that the timeline is a bit tight. We do have access to the applications right now. We won't have the program summaries for a few more weeks. Tom?
I'm unlikely to have those questions prepared unless you tell me you need to have them turned in at a certain date. So if you don't tell me that, I'll come to the meeting with those.
And can I tell you that? Well, I mean, you know, if people could turn in their questions by the 16th, we would know whether or not we were in a position to allow some give and take.
That's a Monday.
I agree with Julian and Elaine that we don't want long conversations with the proposers. That's not the point of our review. Our review is to really have a discussion among ourselves as we provide feedback to the staff about what we think should be funded so that they can come back with some recommendations on funding levels. So, if it's feasible, it would be great if people could turn in the questions for the proposals that are due on April 18th by the 16th, and ditto for April 25th on the 23rd, so we would have a sense of what the questions are. And email is fast.
The staff raises questions in their summaries, which I find quite informative and helpful. And so a lot of the questions are likely to be there, actually. And the staff is also so what I'm concerned about now has less to do with the kinds of questions that you can garner in advance because you've read the written proposal. But now I'm concerned. Well, what happens? Some questions arise as a consequence of our conversation with each other.
Right.
Things that I didn't think about what you said over there, but that helps me to understand. That's the point of our conversation.
Right. Absolutely.
I think we ought to be able to have that conversation and limit discussion from the agencies to points of information that we wish to have in order to inform ourselves if there's some piece of information that we don't have. But how to deal with that is difficult. I think it's going to be mostly difficult for you in as Tom was just saying in that role. And maybe I really don't know how to handle, and I don't know how to handle Elaine's observation that it's really not fair if this gets out of hand. And I don't mean anybody's intending to do anything devious here. I think it's completely inadvertent, but we have to have some sort of process that's both fair and predictable.
I think that's, at least we see ourselves as the keepers of a fair process.
We have rejected applications in the last 2 years just because one or two forms weren't submitted and they couldn't be submitted because they weren't completed. So we don't want to create an opportunity for you just submit something that you know isn't complete because you're going to be able to write the application in May, you know, when you know what the boards are looking for. I think that's, we see the potential for abuse of that. And like you said, it's not malicious, of course.
No, it's not malicious.
It's an opportunity. It's up to us to maintain a fair process. So given that we did reject some applications this year and last year as well, I think that makes us even more motivated to put a container around what kind of information can be added later.
So one other question about this to you. I had thought that the process was that people from the agency submitting applications can look at the information that's abstracted by the staff, including staff comments.
Yes.
And then they have an opportunity to deal with factual corrections at that point. So
in writing.
So why do we need more than that? Because if some conversation comes up among board members, is that what we're after here?
Well, you know, actually, as I'm thinking through it a bit more, Julian, I think there was a slight sense of discomfort that the agency sat in the room and never had a chance to respond. On the other hand, we were able to get through all the proposals, and as a board, felt pretty good about the process and our understanding of what the proposals were. So I made the assumption, because we were breaking it into two meetings, that would give us a little more flexibility. I didn't take into account Elaine's point that not all people play equally. So except for points of information, I guess I would prefer not to have to manage the clock and say, I'm sorry, your time is up. And I would say that it's not a time to ask for verbal responses except for clarification. And that would simply be points of information. And that we would continue with the list of questions. We managed that okay last year. And I think there were 60 questions. They didn't all go to one agency.
You could, I hate to say this, you could take, there is a, oh.
So on the other side of it, in May, you would we've set aside two meetings for you to consider the staff recommendations for funding. We've never done that before. You've usually only had one meeting to talk about that. And I think last year it was really clear that two would be, you know, they really needed the time. And not just the time to talk about it, but the time to sit in front of the recommendations, too. So you could change that timeline if you need more time for agency questions about the applications. But I felt like that was just as important as having enough, you know, like having enough time to consider what to fund was just as important as considering the applications, right? So it, but that is where you could have some leeway if you wanted to.
I keep trying to, I don't know, maybe it's just my... I don't think that's what we ought to be doing, Lynn. I think we have a process in which people are supposed to submit applications, and the application process is very clear as to what you're supposed to do. And you look at it, and then you comment on it, and people have an opportunity from your comments that are posted to clarify what they think is incorrectly misunderstood. I don't know why the process should be some sort of endless. It just doesn't make any sense to me, because we're done with that point, and now what we're doing, we're in the, is the evaluative process, which involves necessarily members of the board sharing with one another their impressions mm-hmm. about the programs. And those get to be sort of, they're somewhat qualitative, and they have to do with questions, preferences, really, about priorities. And I mean, part of the board's function in part is to set priorities. I mean, policy. That's what the board's function is to create policy. Policy then becomes actionable through which programs are funded, and which we rely a lot on the staff's knowledge about what's proposed and what they know about the programs. I think we ought to be entitled to have an evaluative conversation with where there was an end to the input from the applicants.
It should end with the April meetings. And then staff provide the recommendations. What we didn't have last year was time to look at their recommendations before we had to vote.
I'm in total agreement
but
with
no,
that.
It should not continue. So the evaluation is April. The decisions on funding is May.
Doing.
Okay.
Are you all comfortable with this arrangement?
Could you turn on your microphone?
Are you all comfortable with that split of the apple? It's not an even split, but the larger organizations are in the first week. So
I don't have a strong preference one way or the other. I thought it was helpful to split it into two sessions.
Sure, it's a good idea, but what if maybe we get through the first one quicker and we want to keep moving because we got a lot more to do next time. So I don't know, and I feel totally comfortable promising that we won't talk about your program on this day.
So then we should overschedule for that first meeting, just so that...
Oh, I'd leave that to have manage it up to you.
We don't need
that's how we do it.
You do it however you want.
So we'll change this list a little bit.
So that there are more programs on that first meeting, so you can keep going if you want to. Okay.
Okay, this was a point of discussion. There's no decision. But the staff now knows our point of view. So moving on then to the summary of the Legislative and Policy Conference. You provided a lot of information in the packet, Lynn. Did you primarily want us to read and ask you questions, or were there some highlights you wanted to identify?
There's so much there, and it was It was more of a challenge to summarize my notes than it was to run up and down the street to cover two different conferences. But I actually, if you're interested in any of these topics, I have additional notes, and I can get some of the presentations more easily than others, but I should be able to get all of it at some point. They're national conferences, so they'll post them. But anyway, if you have questions about any of them, too, that's they were all over the place.
I don't have a question. I just have an observation, which I wouldn't mind appearing in our minutes or allowing, maybe even being more formal than that about it, because I think that we're fortunate to have an executive director who makes the effort to actually know what's going on nationally in terms of all these issues that affect us locally. And in some ways, I'd like to acknowledge that and have a sense of appreciation, because I think she's doing the county a terrific service providing this information.
Thank you. And I can announce that we have one goodie from us, you know, from us going there and representing the county. Champaign County has been invited to be a stepping up innovator community. There's no money attached to that, but some of the people who've worked for years on the issues around mental health and criminal justice are going to be presenting to counties from all over the country and then acting as a mentor to them. So that's I think that's a nice recognition, and it's possible in April I'll be able to announce a cash award to Champaign County for a specific project, so because of our involvement here. So paying for all of the memberships.
Talk about good leveraging.
Right.
Thank you for all of the information. And some of it may be good for a study session down the road.
Okay. And the DD, there's four DD information sheets here. Our associate director for DD helped write these. So she doesn't often come to these evening meetings, but she has a presence in this board packet because she helped do this. I'm really proud of those.
Moving on to D, liaison guidelines. This was heavily discussed at our last meeting, and we have on page 53 the motion and on page 54 the revised guidelines. Everyone had a chance to read the guidelines. Do you want to review them again? They're on page 54. Do we have a motion to approve the guidelines? Moved by Elaine. Do we have a second?
Second.
Seconded by Julian. Discussion of the guidelines. Hearing no discussion, I'll call the vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstain? Passed. Okay, great. Now we move on to agency information, and we appreciate the fact that first followers waited for us to get through new business. It is now your turn to come to the microphone.
Good evening, everybody. For those of you, my name is Marlon, who do not know me, my name is Marlon Mitchell. I'm the founding co-director of First Followers, and what brings us out tonight, I have my staff and my co-director, James Kilgore, with me. And basically what we want to do is just come out and give a brief presentation or an update to some of the activities that we've been fortunate to have with the being blessed with the funding that you all have provided for us. In particular, we wanted to talk about what we call GoMad, which is kind of this sweatshirt that we're all dappered in. But basically what it is, it's GoMad. MAD stands for, it's an acronym for Make a Difference. Go Make a Difference. And basically what we did was we ran a 14-week project with a group of 18 to 24-year-olds who had been involved with the criminal justice system. And one of the things that we wanted to do was to develop the workforce development skills of these individuals. One of the things that we prided ourselves on is to bring a counter-narrative to that stigma that's placed on African-American males that are in that age group of 18 to 24. So we identified, or we accepted 10 applications from 10 individuals, 18 to 24. Many of them, as I said, I think 80% of them have been involved with the criminal justice system at some point. Some of them didn't have their high school diploma. Some of them did. But in a nutshell, basically what it was a 14-week workforce development program that was sectioned off into two halves. The first 8 weeks, what we did was we had classroom settings where we taught them different skill sets, math, some entrepreneurship, some financial literacy, some self-identity, all these different things that come out of a non-traditional curriculum. So with that, the second half of the second phase of the program was a six-week part where we actually did hands-on activities in building construction trades. We were gifted a home last fall from an angel donor, and we renovated that home. We're still in the process of renovating that. It was a one-bedroom home, but the guys came into in the second half of the program. We were out at the home 5 days a week, just renovating, tearing it all down, and now we're building it back up. Some of the things that really stood out, or the takeaways that I took from the program, was that the relationship building. And what I mean by the relationship building wasn't just between the facilitators and the instructors and students, but also student-to-student relationships. Many of the guys that came into the program didn't know each other, but at the end of the program, they were actually hanging out and kind of doing some things outside of the classroom, just became buddies over time. Another thing I wanted to highlight is the employment piece. So at the 14th week, we were able to employ 5 out of 10, or find employment for 5 out of 10 short-term employment. We would like to do this again, but rolling into that, one of the charges that we picked up on is to make sure that 100% of these individuals that go through this 14-week program will be employed at some point. Our goal is to have gainful long-term employment, and what I mean by that, many of them didn't have the skill set of building construction, but now all of them are very versed at what they want to do, and they can talk about some of the things that they learned. But one of the things that they do want to do, or one of the areas they want to explore, is the labor trade unions. So we actually had an opportunity to go out and visit the local plumbers and pipe fitters union and kind of sit in on some of their instruction with their apprentices so that we can see what they're doing, or they got an opportunity to see what they're doing, and went out to their hall and kind of spent 2-3 hours with them. So those are some of the things, and I'm just going to wrap it up as I would like to invite Tammy up so she can talk a little bit about some of the mathematics literacy that she taught as a part of the program.
Thank you. Good evening. As Marlon said, I'm Tammy Bond, and as Marlon said, I did teach the math portion of the course, 8 weeks of math. And the thing that, as Marlon said, that I took away from it was the confidence building. Math skills and math classes are not the most liked classes I've learned in school. And, of course, with this population of students, it definitely was not one of their favorites. So I won't say it was difficult, but with the non-traditional setting, as Marlon said, I was able to really build confidence in that group of boys, as he said, or young men, as he said, they were able to come together with each other, work together, and as far as non-traditional setting, I understand that smaller classroom size can create some increases in performance. However, there were also other components that went along with that, such as the output of their work in the classroom. Not everyone can sit 50 minutes and be productive as far as classwork. So we were flexible with breaks and things in between or during the 2-hour time period that I spent with them. They were able to do the work on the whiteboard if they like, instead of sitting at the desk or tables, what have you. They were able to orally speak the steps of a problem rather than trying to write it down. And I mean, the math is important, definitely, but with the age of technology, punching in the numbers is basically what you do, but you have to know the steps. So if you can orally take me through the steps to how you're going to get to that end goal, reach that end answer, then that's another way of assessing that they understand. We talked about the language of math. You're not always going to see 1 plus 1, 3 times 12 in the real world situation. So you need to know the language that is used when they're talking about math so that you know when to add, when to multiply, subtract, or divide. So they were, to my surprise, very engaged with that and performed well. And as I said, confidence increased immensely by the end of the 8 weeks. At the beginning of the 8 weeks, they didn't want to speak much. They were not wanting to do much because they were afraid of getting something wrong. They were once they learned that they were understood they were learning a skill rather than being taught to take a test well, a standardized test well. And once they understood that and knew that they were in a safe environment to perform, then it really increased their confidence and made for a better math learning experience.
I got my own chair. Thank y'all. Yeah, my name is James Corbin. I'm also a social service administrative grad, and I played a part in this as well. My part was the financial awareness piece and literacy, and my partner part, her part was to bring in, like, the mindfulness. She used art therapy, taught them meditation, ways to cope with stress, which was very important. So there was a life skill aspect to this as well. What I learned, well, in the beginning, my goal was to structure an identity, and I did that by using psychometrics such as the Myers and Briggs, these type of things, because I found out just from my own personal example, I really didn't know who I was for a long time, and I kind of, you kind of side to the identity what society said you are. So then I played to their strengths in that psychometric. And that way then, I also showed how that psychometric can be used in investing, like how this play out in life. To once you know these weaknesses or areas that you spend in time of these weaknesses, you can avoid them. So that's what I was aiming for. And we hit that target too. We hit that target very well. They had some very good conversations, and I really enjoyed it with them because they always say, "Hey, Tiger," they call me Tiger. So if you hear that, you know it. But that whole piece right there, that connecting with them on that personal level, and I wanted them to use that because we want to stay grounded with the group to where they feel comfortable. But at the same time, we want to elevate them without them knowing they're being elevated. So what I seen in the beginning was simple. I saw 9 young men come in with no direction, half of them couldn't work a power tool, didn't have a male to teach them these things, how to read blueprints and all that. I never learned how to read a blueprint. They learned that. They did all that. All that was done in this one program in that short time period. We want to take it further We have a lot of other ideas that we could take this further, especially with structuring who they are and who they can be, and show them how they could be an asset to the community. That's the whole concept. The entrepreneur piece, we want to really increase that. Okay, you can't find a job, then you make a job. But you don't wait for it. You don't have to go into negativity or something like that. There's other ways of doing this. We'll show you how to set up a business. I got my undergrad is in small business development. So I got that as well. That's pretty much what I want to say. I'm not going to take up much of your time. I appreciate your time. I would just like to say this program, I would like to see it grow. I'm not sure where I'll be at after this graduation is over, but I did enjoy this, and I did enjoy connecting with these young men. Thank you for your time. All right.
Thank you very much. We appreciate the report from First Followers. Do we have another? Sure.
I just wanted to introduce myself to the board, and my name is Chris Gleason, and I'm the new executive director for Rosecrans Central Illinois. I started about 45 days ago. The first 30 days I learned 5 places to go. Now I have like 7, so I'm pretty good with that. I come from up in northwest of Chicago, where I spent a majority of my career up there, the last 25 years working for various agencies, last 6 for Rosecrans. They asked me to come down here. So we're in the midst of what does that look like for our family and how do we move and all those fun things. My daughter, thankfully, is in graduate school, just taking up space on our couch. But so we're doing all those things. So I just want to introduce myself, and I'm grateful for you all and the work that you put in and the volunteer time and hours and for the team here as well. So thank you.
Thanks so much for coming forward and introducing yourself. We appreciate it.
Thanks.
Good luck.
Thanks.
Tom.
Ask a question from First Followers.
Sure.
I wanted to ask Tammy, who did the math, instruction, only because you did this instruction in a group?
I did. There were the 10 participants, we call them scholars, and I was the lead facilitator, but I did have a co-facilitator also, which was very helpful because he brought in the aspect of seeing things that in ways that maybe I didn't, and so he was very helpful also. But yes, I did teach the 10 in a group.
Do you think that they're being in a group together, were they able to help each other?
Exactly. That came along as the 8 weeks went by. As Marlon mentioned, many of them didn't know each other. There may have been a couple of people that knew each other or had crossed each other's paths before. But once they were into it, like I said, confidence building. No one wants to say anything if they think they're going to be wrong. So once that confidence started to build in them, they really did work together and help each other. And I encouraged them to do that because you're going to have to learn to work out problems in the real world without always having somebody to go to and say exactly how you should do this.
You need to correct me if I'm overstating this, but okay. I noticed you called them scholars.
Yes.
And I'm in my head, I'm thinking that these aren't young men who are used to being in school or maybe even performing well in school. Mm-hmm. And so I'm guessing that the group format you use is really a way to new way to actually begin teaching young people who may have not been so successful.
Definitely,
in school.
Definitely, especially young black males in that population, because we do realize, and I think, and Marlon can probably speak more to this than me, but research shows that a non-traditional way of teaching those students is much better than the traditional school setting.
So one of the things that I do at the university as a PhD student, I'm in my fourth year, study the various curriculum and instructions. So one of the things that I study under Dr. Stafford Hood, where he teaches culturally responsive evaluation and assessment. And some of the things that I've researched is how do communities of color best learn, and trying different methods and different approaches in different ways. So some of the things that we implemented in our program came out of the research, and that's why I was able to put together a team that had these various skill sets. Tammy, she's a special ed teacher. She spent some time in a district here in Nevada. Mm-hmm. And then Tiger also, he has a very unique skill set. So these are some of the things that we put together, and James and I, we talked about this for maybe a year before we rolled it out. And so, I mean, it was very robust. It was grounded in the literature, and it's one of those things that we knew that if given the time and the proper planning, we can pull something off that was a little different than a traditional education system.
I think we also have Becca. Oh, sorry.
I just wanted to add one thing, and that is that we also had an external evaluator, a PhD student in evaluation from the university, who came in and ran focus groups with the students and talked about their experience of the class. And just to follow up on the math thing, one of the things that they said was that when Tammy taught, she made sure everybody in the class understood what was being taught before they moved on, and they. In the talking to the evaluator, they said they'd never experienced that before, that they were always the ones left behind, and that's how they got pushed out. So there's a number of things that came out in terms of the evaluation that I think showed that we also opened the sessions with what we call the check-in, where people kind of just talked about how they're feeling, what was on their mind for the day, and so forth, to kind of connect with their, you know, with their psychological state before we started the programs. Yeah.
Thank you again. Becca?
I'm Becca Obachowski with Community Choices. I just wanted to share, we have an event coming up, a supportive housing informational meeting with John Fallon from CSH. He's going to be coming down to present about sort of what supportive housing is, giving some examples of what it's looked like in different places around the state, and then have some time to answer questions for people that are looking to set up different sorts of supportive housing arrangements for themselves, for their family members, or just within the community. And the focus is probably going to be a little bit more targeted towards individuals with developmental disabilities, but supportive housing is something that affects, you know, all of the communities that that this board helps to support. So we'd love for people who are I'm sorry, for other organizations or different stakeholders for mental health or other areas are more than welcome to attend. We'd love to have their input. So I made up some just very brief little flyers. They're over there by the sign-up sheet. So feel free, anyone, to take those. It's on next Thursday, the 29th, at the Champaign Library in the Pavilion Room C across from the cafe. So, yeah, thanks.
Any other agency input? Okay. Thank you very much, and thanks for your patience in waiting an hour to provide your input. I appreciate it. Do we have a need for a study session next week? Are there issues that people feel they would like to spend time on before we jump into April and the review process?
I won't be able to be there.
Okay. I'm not saying we need one. I'm asking, do we need one? Julian.
Rewind that.
Yeah, let's tape that.
I don't think I have no.
I think we could probably skip it.
Yeah.
Okay. Any objections to skipping the study session? You know, we've actually had a study session every month so far this year. So I think a month off would be a good thing.
And you never know when you're going to need one, an extra one, because you might, right? You
never know.
And it looks like the schedule suddenly stops on June 27th, and then you'll never meet again. But we are actually working on we're working on the next year of meetings. So I think you don't always meet in July, but we'll be presenting you with a draft of meetings that go past June pretty soon.
Great. So then approval of the Mental Health Board minutes, pages 59 to 64. These also include the minutes from February 21st and February 28th. And action is requested. I'm hoping that people have read the minutes in advance of the meeting. Okay, we have a move to approve the minutes. Do we have a second? Second from Judy. Discussion? Hearing no discussion, call the vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstain? Okay, passed. Lynn, do you have additional comments?
Just one. Well, actually, two things, but you might want to do, I'm not sure if you want to do this very last one.
Oh,
there's a flyer on the table. Okay, so I have two comments. The first one is this flyer on the table is about a piece of legislation that really has gotten legs in the Illinois General Assembly, and this would expand, this is not directly of your concern, but it allows townships and municipalities to set up 377 boards. Right now, only counties can have 377 boards, so your DD board is somewhat unique in the state. So this would allow townships and municipalities to do the same, and this is important because in Cook County, there are some who are ready to do it. Then, so that's the premise is, you know, we're supporting this legislation because that would be good for us, that would be good for the people of the state, and then the rest of the flyer is devoted to why that would be good for the people of the state. It shows that if Illinois continues to choose to serve people at the current rate, then people will be waiting 38 years from the day they say, I absolutely need services, till they get them. And 105 years if we're just including people who are registered and are not saying they need services. So that's a terrible situation to be in. I know that it's the federal judge is back on the issue. The federal court monitor will probably be talking to us about it within the year. But for now, this is one thing. Counties, townships, and municipalities can say, well, we can do better than the state of Illinois is doing. So I just thought some of the details about the pace and type of DD services, and that Illinois has not really improved its situation for a long time, that this was interesting, important to have. And the other thing, this is sad news, and there's an obituary in front of you, too. This is the obituary of George Roth, who served as the executive director of the Mental Health Board for until 2000, but 10 years. And many people here knew him personally. He was a really great guy. He came by last fall to give me a bunch of advice, which was amazingly relevant. So now I think he was just made of magic. And I think a lot of people who knew him say that too. So I just didn't know it until recently.
So is it appropriate for us to, have some sort of formal acknowledgement of
absolutely
George.
Go ahead.
Oh, I didn't have anything particular planned other than essentially what Lynn just remarked about. He was not only was he a former director of this body, the executive director, but he was also deeply involved in the community for so many years. I actually knew him when he worked for Adler's Own Center. which of course some people know what it was, back when we used to have state mental health services that mattered. And he really cared about people, and so he just deserves recognition.
He also was instrumental in ensuring that the Birth to Six Council was established to bring together providers for services for children with in early intervention and in child care in general, so that our community was really ahead of the pack in terms of having a coordinated council. So he was pretty remarkable. Mm-hmm. Any other comments to commend?
Both Stephanie and I worked for George. She worked for him a little bit longer than I do. One of the things I remember about him is when I was hired, he said, well, I want at least a 2-year commitment, and here I am to this day. But then it seemed like no sooner had he hired me than I guess it was 6 months later, and here he's asked me for a 2-year commitment. 6 months later, he announced he was retiring. So he wasn't willing to wait me out, I guess. So he was an interesting man, and I'm glad to have had the opportunity to work for him.
So does it make sense for us to maybe say something that's official, as in the board, the mental health board takes note of and acknowledges the many years of service to this community from George Roth? And I don't know if he was the first. Stephanie says he wasn't the first, but a long-term director, and have it
appear in the minutes
as a motion that we acknowledge.
If we're going to do that, we also ought to make it available for this memorial service on April 28th.
Yes.
Then that would be an official recognition from the board. So that's what it says, April 28th.
So I believe you have just made a motion, Julian, to for the board to acknowledge the contributions of George Roth, and Stephanie will put together that acknowledgement based on your comments.
If someone will second it.
If someone will second it, which I think Tom inadvertently did, by saying it should be represented at the April 28th memorial service.
Should we add that to the motion?
Yes.
Then I'll second that, yeah.
Okay, all those in a discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Should we worry about Mark's ability to count? If he made it a commitment for 10 years and now he's here like 25
years. Two years, Tom.
2 years.
don't say that. Just counting very slowly.
We're really happy that he's still here. And we have just a couple more things on the agenda. And then we might actually be able to adjourn. So, thank you for staying, Mark. So the next item on the agenda is staff reports, and what I would particularly like us to look at is the financial information, pages 68 to 74. I had a chance to review it. I hope everyone else did. Is there a motion to approve the expenditure report? It's on page 68. Tom has moved to approve. Is there a second? Judy has seconded. Discussion, questions?
We've had a lot of excess revenue refunds and also refunds for my expenses. So I don't know which one. Oh, that. Okay. At the beginning of, so when we create the budget, we base, there's an agreement between the boards for sharing of administrative costs. It's 42.15% of some costs. So that's where we start. But then because there are a whole bunch of different things that changed that. Like the administrative costs were far less than we expected, partly because of the staff vacancies, but then also excess revenue was returned within the fiscal year so that it could be credited back to the right line. So that decreased the administrative costs to both boards. So a refund was due back to the DD board because they pay you each month. So they got too far ahead by paying based on an estimate that was too high. Okay.
Thank you. Any other questions? Okay, hearing none, call the question. All those in favor of approving?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Passed. I wanted to provide a moment for staff reports. We have a report from our, we have Chris's report, which is a one-pager,
yeah,
on page 65, which presents our revenues and expenditures and where we are in terms of the percentage of the budget.
This is for last year, for the total year.
So the Mental Health Board expended 94% of its budget, and the DD Board expended almost 98% of its budget. So this will be nice to have a very straightforward, targeted report on our overall financial, which was hard to get in the past, so this is great.
I think his intention was to provide that to you each quarter, and this is the full year of 2017 just because he had the information. So I think your next board packet will have the first quarter. So I like it.
I like it. It's okay. Transparent. We also had a report on the expo, which is coming up very shortly, April 7th. Please remember to go if you're in town. Okay.
And if you would like to volunteer at the expo, feel free to email me or let me know.
Okay.
They're very short shifts.
Okay.
But it requires thousands of people, millions.
If you don't like to smile, I would not recommend you be a door greeter.
Okay.
That's the only recommendation.
All right. So you're looking for door greeters?
Yes.
All right. Let's see who emails you.
Okay.
Okay, great. Any other board announcements? Oh, sorry, board-to-board reports. Yes, let's do that quickly. Elaine?
Judy and I, and actually Lynn too, were at the Community Coalition meeting, and you know, I'm not going to go through all that we heard. It was notable that Fresh Start had another call in, and they have 9 participants, so they're starting out a new program there. And next month's coalition meeting is going to be on immigration issues, So I think that'd be interesting. Mostly we heard a number of updates on programs that we fund, and Tracy Parsons gave kind of a shout out to the Mental Health Board for their support. And Judy and I today also went to the Mental to Rosecrans and met Chris Gleason and also Julie Cartel and Gail Rainey sat with us and just kind of, you know, just kind of introduced ourselves and got to chat a little bit. So that's it.
So I also went to a Rosecrans Community Board meeting, which I was invited to, presumably because there was a message saying that I was going to liaison. And I met Chris. I was sort of actually almost anticipating that he might give the same kind of enthusiastic presentation about what he has planned, because I think the Mental Health Board would be really interested in what he has to say. And so I won't say what I heard you say, because I think you can say it yourself whenever you want to, but it was quite a good thing to hear about. So welcome.